2 years ago, Americans watched in horror as a crisis unfolded at the Kabul airport.
There's desperation and anguish.
More than 80,000 Afghans have since arrived in America, but this story is still unfolding. I'm Andreas Martin. In my new podcast, Stranger Becomes Neighbor, we'll find out what happens to these new arrivals in our communities. Who would help our newest neighbors? Follow us at KSLPodcast.com, Apple Podcasts, or anywhere else you listen.
Utah's best athletes count on flexibility, speed, strength.
And the Jazz pick up their 22nd assist.
So they count on University of Utah Health.
Brielle Soleil puts this game away.
And so can you. Leading doctors, a world-class environment, award-winning innovation, care to be great.
14 unanswered by the Utes.
University of Utah Health, caring for Utah's best and yours. Schedule your appointment now at uofuhealth.org/care to be great.
All right, welcome into another Jazz Notes podcast. Thanks for listening, subscribing. Give us a review. Let us know what you think of the Jazz Notes podcast. My name is Cleon Wall. Ben Anderson is here, and the Utah Jazz, surprise, surprise, they're on a two-game losing streak. Here's why I want to bring this up first, Ben. I want to bring this up because on a Jazz Notes segment that I did for KSL News Radio last week, I said, hey, the Jazz really have a good chance that they could get up to maybe 10 games, winning 10 straight games, or at least 9 straight games, into that game going into Milwaukee. And so I said, you know, I laid out the plan, but I also said, you know, Memphis, it's not going to be easy because Mike Conley's going home. Ja Morant's pretty good. Then they're going to play Minnesota. They're not as bad as maybe people thought they would be. Karl Anthony Towns is a good player. Yep. And then they play the Warriors, and I thought that was going to be a win. But they play the Warriors, and they play the Pelicans, and I thought, man, they could actually be at 9 games. Well, of course, right after I did that, they lose 2 straight games. Yeah. So, yeah.
And to teams, I think Jazz fans in general, and you know, even us didn't think they were going to lose. I thought they'd beat Memphis on the road, and I thought they'd have a good chance to beat Minnesota here. I always think when you have a weird home-and-home like the Jazz have right now with the Timberwolves, you want to split them. Jazz can still do that. Maybe they just, you know, flipped it. Maybe they inverted the way they usually do it, and they win a game on the road, and each team switch road wins.
And maybe it's because Andrew Wiggins will play. Maybe that's the reason Jazz are going to win. Andrew Wiggins has actually been, I don't want to spend too much time on Andrew Wiggins, but Wiggins has been playing good this year. So when they said he wasn't going to play for a third straight game, I thought Jazz have a pretty good chance to win this game. And so, not to see that happening. Maybe actually it's Andrew Wiggins that's bringing the Timberwolves down. No, I'm just teasing.
But honestly, I was thinking that, you know, late in the game, those possessions that were Jeff Teague and Karl Anthony Towns that killed the Jazz, they just couldn't get that stop. I was thinking, you know what? If Wiggins takes a couple of those as isolation plays, which he likes to do so much, Jazz are probably in better shape. So honestly, that is the place where even having a guy like that who tries to over-isolate can kill you. And the Jazz over-isolated down the stretch last night. That was part of their problem.
Yeah, and that led to some poor shooting. Not just late in the game, but I think poor shooting overall. Last night, they only shot 36.5% from the field against Minnesota. They didn't shoot that well in their loss against Memphis either. They only shot 40.2% against Memphis in that game. It just seems to be that was one of the keys in this game. I'm not going to say the key, but hey, you've got to make baskets in these games. And when you're not scoring against Minnesota, who in the past has been a poor defensive team, if you're not shooting well, you're not going to win these games. I was a little shocked that they were not able to shoot as well as they could against the Minnesota Timberwolves.
And really, that was the main problem. I mean, the Jazz just got suckered into taking some bad mid-range shots, which before the game, Ryan Saunders, the coach of Minnesota, said, we're going to let you take mid-range shots. I mean, that's what we believe in, and that's what we're going to run with. And they did, and the Jazz fell into that trap. And it just seemed like the Jazz over and over kind of fell into the Timberwolves traps all night long, which was, you're going to put Rudy Gobert out at the three-point line, and if you do, we're going to make layups. And if you don't put Rudy Gobert far enough out on the three-point line, Karl Anthony Towns is going to beat you from three. And that's what they did on the offensive side. And then the defensive side, yeah, they said, Donovan Mitchell, we believe you're going to miss enough mid-range shots that we'll have a chance to win the game. And Donovan Mitchell finishes 5 of 25.
Going back to that, now let's talk about Donovan Mitchell first. You brought it up. Let's talk about Donovan Mitchell first. Yikes. 29 points against Memphis. I guess it just shows how much you need him, but you need him to shoot well. Against Memphis, he had 29 points, but he struggled in the fourth quarter. And we can go over it again and again. Yeah, he got fouled. He got fouled on that last shot. But Quinn Snyder brought it up, and I think all of us know this in basketball. Just because you get fouled on a last shot, and yes, the Jazz probably should have got the call, and he should have gone to the foul line, they should have had that game in hand way before that time period. Yep. But you need Donovan Mitchell to be able to score, and we saw it last night. He goes 5 for 24 or 5 for 23? It was really bad. Yeah. Let's just say that.
He was 5 for 25. I think it was worse than all of them. I think he missed 20 shots. I could be wrong.
But wow. Yeah. But you need him to score because you really don't have what let's put the dividing line. You need him to score because everyone else feeds off of him. That's what I'm trying to say.
Yeah.
Just spit it out, Clan. Everyone feeds off of him. You need him to play well so that everyone else feeds off of him. When he doesn't play well, the other guys normally, for me, are not going to play as well. And that's, again, what happened last night. They let him have mid-range shots. They didn't hit the mid-range shots as well as they did. Bojan Bogdanovic is your leading scorer, but he only has 18 points in the game. Donovan Mitchell shoots poorly. Mike Conley, he shoots okay, but he probably could have played a little bit better. What we said before the season, this team is going to feed off of Donovan. He is still your star when it comes to being on offense. You need to feed off him. The Jazz are going to go only as far as maybe Donovan takes them because he still is the star. And we saw that again last night. That's just a small microcosm of what this team really is right now.
You were right. It was 5 of 23. He only had one made layup within 3 feet of the rim. He had one other score in the paint. And then he had one kind of mid-range shot and hit a couple of threes. But that was it. That's just not enough baskets for him. Now, he can complement that by getting to the free throw line. He's done it better this year. Last night, he missed a couple of them, 5 of 7 from the free throw line. So 7's a good number. That's a healthy number for Donovan. He needs to keep going there, but he's fallen in love with that mid-range shot because it was so successful early in the season. And, you know, historically, that's not a very good shot, and it doesn't fall for anybody really in the NBA. And right now, Donovan Mitchell looks like early he was the exception, and then it's come back to earth. And when that happens, you've got to readjust. And actually, I think that's the nice thing now about going up against Minnesota again for the second game of a back-to-back is that you get to fix those problems in a way you know how. I mean, you know exactly what Minnesota's going to try and do. It's harder to make adjustments off of a win than it is a loss, certainly. And Donovan Mitchell realizes, hey, I either need to take more threes, even though he wasn't particularly efficient from the three-point line last night, just 2 of 7, or he needs to step up and get to the free throw line or get layups. And that's something I think Donovan Mitchell can work on, and I suspect we will see that.
And I want to clarify something with you when it comes to mid-range shots. When you're talking about mid-range shots, are you talking about like when they're wide open and your free throw line, like you're coming off of a screen? Because me personally, and again, I'm old school, so I see that and I think that's a good shot. Is that what you're talking about with mid-range shots, Ben? Or are you more talking about I come off that screen and instead of pulling up right off of that screen, I'm dribbling a couple more times. That gives guys time to recover. I'm now a little bit farther in the key. And, oh my goodness, now I've got a really more difficult shot, or I'm trying to throw up a floater, because I think we see that a lot from Donovan, and he's received some criticism over time about his game when it comes to throwing up floaters, and you'd like to see him hit more, but he's just not very efficient in that. What are you talking about? You know, for people out there, what are you talking about when you're talking about mid-range shots that they're not really good to take?
Mostly for Mitchell right now, it's that floater. It's kind of that weird runner he's taking when he comes off of a screen and is kind of going straight down the paint. And he pulls up instead of challenging whoever the shot blocker is at the rim and saying, instead of finishing over you or through you or around you, I'm just going to kind of throw the ball up over and put it up on the rim and hope it falls. And right now it's not falling for anybody. And Mike Conley's actually one of the guys who's done a nice job of that in his career, making that shot. It's not going down for Conley. Donovan Mitchell can't get it to fall either. So he really isn't taking these crazy isolation dribble up 15 footers. It's a lot of 8 and 9 footers that just aren't falling for him. But if they're not falling, they're not necessarily all that good of shots. And, you know, that's what we're seeing. They aren't that great a shot right now.
And I think for Donovan, this is one thing that you find is hard for him because, like you talked about, you want to see him go hard to the basket. You want to see him attack. But on the other hand, if he keeps doing that over and over and over again, teams are going to adjust.
Yep.
They're going to take charges. They're going to wait for him to come, or they're going to rush out on him a little bit more. And so you see this in-between game that I think he's still trying to figure out, and that is, I'm coming off of a screen. What do I do next? And I think we see that with other players, too. I think we've seen that with Dante Exum in the past. It's just like, wait, now what do I do now?
Yep.
It's a really difficult thing to do. There are few players that can do it. I look back and I'll again go kind of old school, and that's Steve Nash. Steve Nash was beautiful at that. He'd come in and he would seem to be in control the whole entire time. Well, I can do this, this, or this. I'm going to do this. And it seemed like he did the right thing every single time.
Sure.
And I think Donovan is just trying to find that. What do I do when I come off of a screen and I'm in that mid-range? Because I think he wants to make the right decision. And sometimes, because of what you said, teams are now just saying, we want you to shoot that floater. Go ahead. We've seen how you've shot it in the past. You just do that now. And he needs to come up with a better mindset or a better decision once he comes off that screen or he gets into that mid-range area.
And to your point, one of the things he talked about doing before the season was just slowing down once he gets into the paint and make better decisions. And I think he probably just felt a little sped up last night. And now it's easy to feel sped up, especially late in the quarter. And he did, you know, his worst play was in the fourth quarter when he went so heavy on the isolation shots that he felt sped up. Because he felt like they had this huge hill they had to climb and was trying to get it all back each possession. And obviously you can't do that. And you're right, Steve Nash is a good comp as far as a player who just never lost control and was happy to dribble into the paint. And if there was nothing there, I mean, you'd see him just dribble around the out back out to the three-point line and start over. And that's just not where Donovan Mitchell is in his maturity yet. But good thing is he's year three. He's playing a role that he really had never played before he got into the NBA, and he's still figuring it out, and he's still extremely good at it. Last night, he was not good, but he recognized it after the game. He didn't say, I need more opportunities, or I need better shots, or I need my teammates to get me more open. He said, I was bad. I took too many isolation shots. I rushed it, and I can't do that. And it's nice to know that he has that understanding, and he will fix it, and you will see a totally different Donovan Mitchell coming up Wednesday night when they take on the Wolves again.
I think LeBron's another guy, and again, that's another extreme right there. When I talk about Steve Nash, I don't want Donovan Mitchell to become Steve Nash, and what I mean by that is that Steve Nash wasn't explosive going to the basket. Steve Nash was effective going to the basket, but he wasn't explosive, and I don't think you want to take that explosive game away from Donovan, because you see him sometimes just accelerating to the basket so fast and dunking on someone. That's what you want to see, but you're not going to get that every single time. Yep. I think LeBron's not, he's the closest I can get, at least off the top of my head, in a comp. There are sometimes LeBron just goes to the basket and you're thinking, why does he do that all the time? Well, yeah. Teams are going to adjust. So he tries to pick and choose when he's going to be aggressive and pick and choose when I'm going to pass out, when I'm in the mid-range area. You kind of have to find that nice medium, and I don't think Donovan's found it yet. The good thing, like you talked about, he's only in year three.
Yep.
He is going to figure this out. He's going to become a guy who's going to understand what he needs to do in the mid-range, and you're going to have games like this every once in a while. It was funny because you talked about in a previous podcast, man, we haven't seen Donovan have that 5-for-25 game, and then he comes out and he has it. But you're going to have that every once in a while. It's an 82-game season. You're going to have bad games like that. I wanted to focus just real teeny, a teeny bit of time here on three-point shooting. Last couple of games. Last night, the Jazz shot 38.7%. So that's actually pretty good.
Yeah, it's a good number.
And they shot terribly against Memphis. So far on the season, they're 36.5%.
Yeah.
That's not bad.
No, it's not.
I think that you're fine right now with how the Jazz are shooting at least 3 point. At least I would say I'm fine. Of course you want to see it get closer to 40%, but that's otherworldly right there. When you're getting to the 40% range, then you're talking about like the Warriors and teams like that. So how about you? What do you think about the Jazz 3-point shooting so far?
Well, I think the problem hasn't been the percentage. It's just been the raw number they haven't taken. I mean, they need to take more threes. You know, last night they shot the ball well. Like you mentioned, 38% is a great number. You only took 31, and you can go back and, again, 23 shots from Donovan Mitchell, and I've got the NBA shot chart up right here, and the nice thing is at NBA.com, you can honestly see every play. You click on the missed shot and it'll show you the replay of what happened, and there's an open three-point shooter almost every single time he gets into the paint, which is the whole design of getting into the paint. So somebody has to collapse down on you. That's when he needs to slow down and kick that ball out, and I would rather see you in that situation have Mike Conley, even though he's been a little colder to start the year, get an open three, or Joe Ingles get an open three, or Bojan Bogdanovic certainly get some of those shots. He just wasn't finding those guys yet. So that's the decision-making he's got to make.
Speaking of Joe Ingles, last night I saw him take an early three-pointer in transition. I think it was even in the first quarter. And I thought to myself, Ben's got to be happy about that.
Yep.
And the only reason I said I'm happy about it, too, I know that Joe was, I think he was 4-for-12 from the field last night. I'm just going off the top of my head.
Yep.
I know you want to see him shoot better. But I'm sitting there going, yay, he shot 12 times. That's what you need that from Joe. You don't need him to shoot 19 to 20 times. You need that good middle game where you need him shooting about 10 times a game. 10 to 12 times a game is good for Joe. But he has been so focused on doing other things, I just thought that was good. I'm glad to see Joe is taking more shots, and I think that's going to be a positive going forward.
Yeah, his plus-minus wasn't good last night. He was minus 11, which was the worst on the team, but he had 12 points, he had 8 rebounds and 5 assists. I want that from Joe Ingles every night, especially off the bench. Yeah, he can do that.
Exactly. All right, quick break here. When we come back, we're going to talk about Dante Exum's return. Also, Tony Bradley. It's funny that this has kind of turned this way after we praised him not too long ago. But playing off of Tony Bradley in the center position, I want to talk about what does this mean for Rudy Gobert. That's going to be coming up here next on the Jazz Notes podcast.
two friends taking pictures of the rising full moon on a summer night.
Two teenage kids doing what teenage kids do.
When a stranger with a gun and a death wish changed everything.
It was violent, it was senseless, and I will never understand it, I will never accept it.
I'm Amy Donaldson, and unfortunately, we're all too familiar with stories about how violence shatters lives. But what we rarely see is how they are rebuilt. In a new podcast, The Letter, we relive tragedy, but only so we can hear the rest of the story. The struggle to reclaim lives, the realities of grief, and the possibilities of forgiveness.
I believe in miracles. Sometimes I thought, there are no miracles. Yeah, there are, and this is a big one.
Follow The Letter at theletterpodcast.com or wherever you get your podcasts.
All right, welcome back into the Jazz Notes podcast. Dante Exum makes his return last night. He plays 14 minutes. It was nice. He got a steal fairly early. I think it was in the second quarter. Gets a steal, takes it in, slams it home. But then he misses his other three shots. As I said, he only played 14 minutes. It's good to see him out on the floor. But how would you evaluate how he played last night, man?
It was amazing how we got the full Dante Exum experience in how many minutes did he end up playing? He ended up playing 14? Yeah, we got the full Dante experience. Everything he's always been, which is extremely quick. Some bizarrely innate defensive skills that we didn't think he had. I know the Jazz didn't think they had him when they were scouting him. They thought he was going to be purely an offensive player. But that steal he gets in the backcourt, there's not a lot of guys in the league who kind of think that way and then goes up and finishes for the dunk. His ability to attack off the dribble almost from a standstill and get to the paint is absolutely incredible. And he goes 1 for 4 because he just cannot finish at the rim. And his only made basket was in transition on a dunk. And that's what he can do. But in a half court, he's just a square peg in a round hole with the Jazz sometimes. And I love that he can get to the rim, but he's just simply not a threat once he gets into the paint at all to do anything. He can't finish at the rim. He's not a great player as far as drawing players in because he can't finish, meaning he doesn't get to kick the ball out. It's hard to play you in that sense, which is why even after he checked in, I think his first touch was actually on that steal and that dunk because they just don't pass him the ball because you don't need to. He doesn't do anything when he has it. So you love the defense. I thought it was effective. I thought it actually helped the Jazz. I kind of liked the strange bench unit we saw last night with Exum as a result of coming in at the small forward. But it's tough to play him and hope for much offensively.
It was interesting. You asked Quinn on Sunday. You said you asked him about, and he says, "Oh well, Dante's gonna, he's going to help us."
Yeah.
I don't know. I don't think he's going to. I think he needs to force his way in there. Meaning, I think Quinn needs to force Dante's way into the game because he needs to see what he can do. But if he's going to keep having games like this, and it really is true, the whole promise is you think he's going to be smarter with the basketball, or he's going to be able to do something that we just haven't seen him do yet. And I'm just now wondering, are we ever going to see that from him? And I think the question is still out. It's one game. I'm not going to sit here and judge him on a game like that. It was good that he just got back in. I'm just wondering where it goes from here. How is he going to fit into this lineup? And if he's not more effective, are we going to see him go down the bench more and we're not going to see him very much? 14 minutes was nice. I'm wondering, is he going to even be able to get up to 20 minutes? I'd probably say at least right now, no, but you never know what's going to happen.
He can really be a great pesky defensive player and maybe the best on-ball defensive player the Jazz have, and that includes Gobert, that includes Donovan Mitchell, who's a good defensive player, that includes Royce O'Neal. I think as far as pure just annoyance and being in a guy's shorts all night long and being that close to him and making him get rid of the ball, Dante Exum probably has the best ability to do that of anyone on the team, and you saw it for stretches, which was great in his first game back. The best development he could make is raising his career three-point shooting percentage from 30% to 35%. And 35% isn't amazing, but it's passable, which is what, you know, Royce O'Neal is over 40 right now. He's shooting great. If Dante could get up to 35 and just shoot the corner three-point shot, and that's his only role, that would honestly be the best thing you can get from him. But again, asking that after 5 years in the league, if we've never seen it, I mean, guys just generally don't add something like that that they've never had. They generally don't find a way to add that to their game. So maybe that's just asking too much, and you just need him as a transition player. But that bench unit he played in, which was creative of Quinn Snyder to move Tony Bradley out because Bradley's been struggling so bad, and put Jeff Green at the five and Joe Ingles at the four and Dante at the three. You had Donovan Mitchell at the two and then Emmanuel Mudiay, who continues to play extraordinarily well. Emmanuel Mudiay at the point guard. I thought that was really creative, and I thought that was a smart way for Quinn to find a way to get this lineup on the floor and certainly to get Dante on the floor. But it was bad in the first half. It was really good in the second half. I'll be curious if we see the Jazz go back to that.
I'm just wondering, is he even going to be happy with that? Meaning, are you going to be happy? If you're Dante Exum and you know how fast you are you going to be happy with just being defensive guy and maybe shoot a three-pointer every once in a while? Because to me, that says he's going to scream to himself, wait a minute, I've got all these skills and abilities that I have. Now, granted, I don't always finish well at the rim, or I don't always find the right guy when I'm driving to the rim, and I can see guys, and because I've noticed that too. When he drives to the rim, and maybe I'm being too harsh on him, but when he drives to the rim sometimes, it just does not look like he knows what he's going to do. He drives and it's like, oh crud, what am I going to do now? Yeah. Because I've got two guys coming at me and I can't see anyone open right now. I just wonder if that's going to placate him to say, okay, we want you to be just a good defensive player. Because I would think his competitiveness right now, I would think that would be something he'd be like, no, I think I can do much more. But I don't know. I don't know what's in his head right now.
You hope he's willing to make that sacrifice. Because that's what the Jazz need. I mean, the Jazz need him to not be, he doesn't need to go out and be LeBron and be a playmaker and be, you know, Steve Nash that we talked about. He really needs to do the two things he does well, which is be aggressive defensively and then whatever else you want to say he does well offensively. But when you lack touch, it's really hard to be a good guard in the NBA.
You just talked about Tony Bradley. He did not play at all last night. They had Jeff Green play at the center position. Tony was kind of expired. The one thing I said about him in a couple of podcasts ago, I says he just looks like he's out there and he's hustling and he's doing things. And that hasn't mattered the past couple of games. He can hustle as much as he wants, and they're just abusing him, at least on the defensive end. So he's been exposed to it a little bit. This is tough. This is a tough time right now for the Jazz when it comes. If you're going to play small, that's great. But are they going to go to Rudy Gobert too much now? In the past two games, they haven't. They've pretty much stuck to the minutes that they had Rudy Gobert play. Is he going to play more in some of these games just because the Jazz just need someone who can be able to block a shot and get a rebound? I just wonder what they're going to do next right now until Ed Davis comes back.
Yeah, this is kind of the funny spot for the Jazz. And just for some background, Ed Davis is at practice. He's not wearing a cast or anything. He's shooting the ball. He doesn't look like he's running he's not doing any of the different drills, I should say, with anybody else on the team. He's just kind of shooting by himself, mostly stationary, not really jumping. But he's coming back. And that's the weird thing for the Jazz is he's probably only 2 weeks away, maybe 3 weeks away if they decide after they reevaluate him 2 weeks from now, which would hit that four-week mark. If he still needs another week, which is fine, it's only 3 weeks. It's like six games. You know, you're not that far away from him returning. And I think Quinn Snyder is so smart, he knows that what you can't do is reconstruct your whole team and then abandon that in six games. So you have to keep some semblance probably of what you want to do when Ed Davis comes back. Because again, you're coaching an 82-game season. You're not coaching game to game or, you know, day to day, because you can't sacrifice all the chemistry for when Ed Davis comes back, because Ed Davis is just kind of an extra role player that you have on your roster. So some of it you can't be too crazy. And I still think we'll probably see Tony Bradley back. But isn't it amazing, Cleon, how quickly the NBA will scout you and recognize? I mean, as soon as Tony Bradley, he maybe had, what, two games, three games where he wasn't on a scouting report for a team, clearly. And they said, well, Tony said, okay, well, they're not going to stop me from offensive rebounding and then just kind of running and being a big body. It's not going to be a big deal. And then one team figured out, oh, if we put him in the pick and roll, he's just not going to cover the guy. He's not going to cover the small guard and he won't switch. And then they did that every play down the floor, and now you can't play him anymore. I mean, that's how good scouting is in the NBA. They recognize it so quickly. But this lineup that Quinn played last night, I think, is interesting. I think it's creative. Jeff Green wasn't as bad as everyone said. He was really bad in the first half and was really good in the second half. I think you can get away with Jeff Green actually playing the five a little bit. I think we'll see it more.
With Tony Bradley, I guess what you're hoping right now is, at least from a personnel standpoint or a personal standpoint, you're sitting there thinking to yourself, let's hope he doesn't go down anymore. No backsliding. Just because you didn't play in one game and just because you struggled in the past two games, the last thing you need right now is for Tony Bradley to just lose it and say, well, am I worth anything? Do I need to be traded? You really kind of need to find a way to make him still feel engaged, and he needs to find a way, too, to still feel engaged and also figure out, I guess they've kind of figured me out. I got to figure a way out now to make sure that they can't get me off the floor because of those things.
He seems like kind of a sensitive guy.
Yeah.
In all honesty, I mean, just talking to him, he wants to prove people right and not just prove people wrong. I mean, he wants to prove the Jazz right for drafting him, which also means that it kind of feels to me like he needs things to go his way. And he wants things to go his way, and it's going to be hard for him when it doesn't. So you're right. He needs to make sure he doesn't go in the tank, and I'm sure Quinn Snyder's very aware of that. We'll find ways to get him back on the floor to make him successful, to get that confidence back up.
Let me go back to my original question, and maybe I didn't hear it from you. I'm assuming then that Gobert doesn't play any more minutes during this stretch, especially if they're struggling. I would say no. I'd say kind of like what you're talking about right now. Let's just ride it out. We're going to get Ed Davis back soon. I don't think you want to rack his miles up right now, this early in the season. You want to save him for later in the season. He's still getting, what is it, around 32 minutes a night or 34 minutes a night. He's right about there. I don't think or 36 minutes a night. I think it's more like 36. But you want him to be right about there. You want to give him some rest. He needs rest. Because if it comes to a point where he's not getting enough rest, he's not going to be effective on the defensive end. He's going to wear down. And that sometimes leads to injury, too. So I don't see Quinn increasing his minutes. He may say, you need to put me back out there. But I think if you're the coaching staff, if you're Quinn Snyder and you're the coaching staff, you're like, no, don't let's make sure these players are getting their run. We'll get you back in the game at the right time.
On the season, he's just under 35 minutes. Last night, he had 36. Some of that, I'm sure, was the matchup that they were playing against with Karl-Anthony Towns. But yeah, you're probably going to see him getting about 36 right now, I would say, until Ed Davis is able to come back. And then hopefully you can drop that number back down to 34. And it's not a huge deal, but you know that extra minute and a quarter will add up over the length of a season. So I do think you'll probably see, though, as long as Ed Davis is out, probably him up around 36 minutes.
Any other trends or things that you're seeing in the NBA right now that it's just kind of like, huh, that's interesting? First of all, I'll just say, now I know the Lakers' schedule, it has been very favorable for them. But I guess I'm even kind of surprised that the Lakers are playing this well this early in the season. I'm sure they're going to hit some rough patches here in the season, too. But
they're 11-2.
Yeah. That,
you know, I mean, they lost to the Clippers their first game of the season. I'm trying to think of what their other loss was. But, I mean, they're good. They're really good. Dwight Howard's a really good player. I know he's a crazy person, but he's a really good basketball. I mean, he's a lock Hall of Famer, and he's still, what, 32 or 33 years old? Like, he's not ancient. So you're getting that. Anthony Davis is a top five player in the world. LeBron James, any given night, is the greatest player we've ever seen still at 17 years old. He's still that, or at 17 years in the league. So he's still that good. What's weird to me, Cleon, is the lack of true mediocrity in the NBA. And I mean mediocrity as like the middle
average
teams. There's either pretty bad teams or pretty good teams, because I'm doing this a lot. I'm tuning in on League Pass trying to figure out, okay, what's the best game I want to watch tonight? And it's a really good team, like a 9-4 team going up against a 3-7 team. I'm just like, these are bad. That's not a bad game. I would rather have, most importantly, you know, 2 11-2 teams playing each other.
Yeah.
Or a 6-6 team playing a 6-6 team, or two bad teams. You know, I want to see a parity in a game. I'll even watch two bad teams play if it seems like there's going to be parity. There's just good teams or there's bad teams. There's only one team in the league right now, and we're, what, a month into the season? There's one team in the NBA right now that's within a game of 500 either way, or 500, and it's the Orlando Magic, and they're a game under 500. Otherwise, everybody's two games over, two games under, or further apart, and that's not the parity I expected to see in the league this year. I just thought we would see better parity.
Yeah, and it's interesting. The teams that are even considered bad, I would say, are still pretty good. And I'll just go off of two teams that the Jazz have played. And I'm going to say the Grizzlies and the Kings. The Kings, if you want to say it was embarrassing for the Jazz, it was kind of embarrassing for the Jazz. That was they gave up the Kings' first win of the year. Maybe that was embarrassing. Well, since that time, they're 4-2. I mean, is that great? No. It's not horrible either. And then you look at the Memphis Grizzlies, they're 5-8 right now. And the Western Conference right now, we've talked about how deep the Western Conference is. You could even say that this Western Conference, even the bad teams, are going to give you a really good game.
Yep.
Oklahoma City's right there too. Sacramento, Memphis, and right. Oklahoma City, they're all 5-7 or 5-8 right now. Oklahoma City in that first game, they gave the Jazz a really good game. Was I afraid that the Jazz was going to lose in that game? No, I thought that the Jazz would win. Boy, they made him sweat it out, and they made him really work for it. There are just teams out there. And then you have the Portland Trailblazers, who I think all of us thought could miss, the playoffs this year, but they're also still pretty good because you got Damian Lillard, you got CJ McCollum. That's a pretty good backcourt right there. They're 5-9. The San Antonio Spurs are 5-9 right now,
yeah,
which has been kind of surprising. The Western Conference right now is so deep, Ben, that even the bad teams are teams that you don't want to mess with, and they're going to give you a hard game each and every night. So that's kind of been a little bit surprising. Is it surprising that the Warriors are 2-12?
Not with the team that they're playing, but certainly before the season, we would have been surprised. Good news, Jazz fans. You've played one of the toughest schedules so far this season. You've got the 27th easiest schedule, I think, remaining, which is a good, as far as strength of schedule, that's good. You want to be low on that list. Jazz have played a lot of tough teams really early in the season, and they're still well above 500. They're going to be just fine.
All right. That's going to do it for the Jazz Notes podcast. Jazz is going to play the T-Wolves, and then we'll be back, I think, on Thursday. We'll see. Thursday or Friday, we'll figure that out. And then the Jazz got two games, back-to-back games over the weekend. It's going to be fun for Utah Jazz fans as the Jazz are coming back to town for those games. Thanks a lot for listening to us. We'll talk to you soon. Bye-bye.
I'm Dave Cawley, investigative journalist and host of the podcast, Cold. In October of 1985, a woman named Cherie Warren left work at a busy Salt Lake City office
to meet her estranged husband at a downtown auto dealership.
She never made it home. Cherie's car surfaced weeks later in Las Vegas.
In the parking lot of a hotel casino.
No one knows how it got there.
Strange. It was strange.
Both Cherie's estranged husband and her boyfriend raised suspicion for investigators.
I kind of thought that he might have done something.
But no arrests were ever made. In Cold Season 3, we dig into double lives, make new connections in the case, and examine the difficulty raised by reasonable doubt.
We want answers just as much as anyone else.
They have creeps like that now, too, so nothing's changed.
That's the new Cold Season 3, The Search for Cherie. Now available anywhere you get your podcasts.